all sides, whether it be the Taliban, the Afghan government, the US forces, all sides have blood on their hands.
Hi, I'm Tracy Oppenheimer for Reason TV, and today we're here with Anand Gopal. He is a fellow for the New America Foundation and author of the new book, No Good Men Among the Living. Anand, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So, No Good Men Among the Living, it details your experience in Afghanistan for 6 years. You follow three Afghani locals and even embed yourself with the Taliban. What do you want the biggest takeaway to be?
Given the current news of the prisoner swap with the Bergdahl and the five Taliban have been released from Guantanamo, I think it's really important for us to come to terms with the fact that the terms we use, like terrorist, really don't even make sense if you look at it from the Afghan point of view. That it's a lot more complex, it's a lot more fluid, and there's local politics that you have to take into account. The people that we've allied with sometimes are just as bad as the people that the U.S. is fighting.
What did you make of the Bergdahl situation?
Well, the five Taliban prisoners who are exchanged, if you look at their history, it's very interesting because all five were captured when they're trying to cut deals with pro-U.S. forces. In fact, one of them worked for the CIA. Three of them were with the Afghan government or were trying to join the Afghan government. So when you think about it in this way, then actually it throws a whole wrench into the sort of straightforward narrative that these are the worst of the worst terrorists that we should never release.
A lot of that stems from the conflation of the Taliban with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. And you talk about that a lot. Can you speak to how this created problems in terms of U.S. intervention?
The idea at the time in 2001, 2002 was that you're either with us or against us. So essentially the whole world is divided into two camps, and that included Afghanistan. So basically, if you weren't our ally, that means you were a terrorist. But in fact, the situation on the ground is a lot more complicated. There's a lot more gray area. The Al-Qaeda had fled the country in 2002, and the Taliban, from the rank and file all the way to the senior leadership, pretty much had stopped fighting. So we were left with a situation where there was no enemy to fight, but we had thousands of soldiers there ready to fight. What ended up happening, though, is we allied with warlords who had their own agendas. So for example, if you had a piece of land and I was a warlord and I wanted that land, I could tell the US military that you're a member of the Taliban. And since that was the only intelligence they had, they would arrest you.
Interesting. So that led to a lot of corruption.
I think we're still only beginning to recognize our role, our complicity in this process in the early years. It's one of the things I hope to do with my book. Unfortunately, a lot of this history has been lost because this is stuff that's happened deep in the countryside, where reporters usually don't go, where Afghans don't usually have a chance to speak to the international media. They don't write books or write newspaper articles to describe their experiences.
So with the Karzai regime, you say you don't think that they would last a day without the American support that they currently have. Can you talk a bit about this, because they're getting so much money? I mean, where is it going?
Well, actually, yes, 70% of the Afghan budget comes from foreign aid. They're not able to do some basic things like even raise taxes or anything else. So they're entirely reliant on international aid to survive. And if we stopped paying for the government tomorrow, it would collapse. The army would collapse. The police would collapse. And most of the money that's going into Afghanistan actually bypasses the government. If you look at the education numbers, the number that's usually bandied about is that millions, I don't know the exact number, but millions of girls are now going to school, whereas they didn't go to school before. And it's certainly true that more girls are going to school now than in the 1990s. That's not disputable. However, the actual numbers it's unclear where they come from, because I went through the countryside and would go to schools that are officially open according to the Ministry of Education. But you get there and there's nobody there. There's no girls there, there's no teachers there. A lot of corrupt officials are pocketing the money that's supposed to go to the schools and then just writing it down on the rolls that these schools exist. Mm-hmm. The same for clinics. The number of clinics is greatly exaggerated. So we actually don't even know the level of service that exists in the countryside.
The prospects for Afghanistan, no matter what happens, aren't great. So what's the best case scenario at this point?
I think the best case scenario is actually the continuing of the status quo. The status quo is that there are pro-government forces and pro-U.S. forces that are concentrated in the cities and in some northern areas, and there are Taliban in the deep south in the villages. that's not a good scenario, but it's better than the alternative, which is the Taliban march into the cities and we have a return to the 1990s, or that we have a civil war.
I don't think there's any question about the Taliban being a brutal and oppressive regime, but you think it's important to give them a voice. Why do you think it's so important to understand them and not just say they're terrorists?
The Taliban regime is notorious for being one of the most repressive regimes in probably the history of the world. And Afghans mostly hated the Taliban in the 1990s. These were guys who used to walk around with whips and whip people who didn't have beards that are long enough. They kept women in the houses. I think it's actually a terrible thing for Afghanistan, for the world, that the Taliban still exist. And there was no reason they needed to still exist, because this is a very unpopular regime in the 1990s, and we had a chance to basically eliminate them, because they were coming to the U.S., giving up their weapons and trying to find a way to have a reconciliation process. Because that reconciliation was spurned, the U.S. and Afghans are still living with those consequences today. And I think it's important to tell that story and to tell it through the lives of those who actually experienced it. So that's why one of the people that I follow is a Taliban fighter. But I also follow a housewife and a pro-American warlord as well.
No, that was very interesting. Thanks for coming in.
Sure, thanks.
For Reason TV, I'm Tracy Oppenheimer.